Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
With the first pick in the 2008 NBA draft, the Chicago Bulls select Derrick Rose from the University of Memphis.
Derrick Rose is going back home to Chicago.
From Chicago, a guard, 6'3", number one, Derrick Rose.
Oh, stop it. I want to go higher. That's what I'm talking about right there. That's your point guard, Neil Funk, going upstairs to get that ball.
Woo! Lead pass, Rose.
Dragons! Somebody grab Dragons and say, do you know who this kid is? He's from Chicago. He has a 40-inch vertical.
Rejected by Rose! Rondo shot was rejected by Rose! But he will see you in Boston Saturday night for Game 7.
First pick in the draft, rookie of the year. And if he stays healthy, to be their quarterback for the next 10 or more years, what a great luxury to have.
Why can't I be the MVP of the league?
Rose crosses over the fadeaway.
Take a step back and kiss myself.
Oh, my
MVP
gosh, it's
time.
Over.
Why can't I be the best player in the league? I don't see why.
Derek, you led this Bulls team to the best record in the NBA. You are the youngest MVP in NBA history.
Here's Rose. Can he get him off? It is blocked. That will do it. And Miami is headed to the NBA Finals.
It's now well documented. If the Bulls have been able to trade Luol Deng, that big three would have been in Chicago.
Oh, Rose came down bad on his left foot. See him holding onto his knee?
I'm sure everyone around the country is going to say, why was he in the game?
Jeff Tanaka and Derek leaving for the locker room.
I'm thinking about long term. I'm thinking about after I'm done with basketball, having graduations to go to, having meetings to go to. I don't want to be in my meetings all sore.
Rose trying to get open, fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer! It still is a madhouse on Madison as Derrick Rose nails the three. And the Bulls take a 2-1 lead in this Eastern Conference semifinal.
I don't know why I was traded, but I would like to tell him thank you. For real.
I told you that I had thought about the Bulls that I couldn't get out of my head. Here we go. Jersey number one is going to the Raptors.
We've been waiting 6 months for that.
For that, yeah.
Derek, have you ever thought about what it might be like one day if your jersey number one was hung in the Raptors in the UC?
You know what? I haven't really thought about it.
Breaking news. Derrick Rose, after 15 NBA seasons, is retiring.
And that's that.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
There's a lot in there to relive. The Goodfellas treatment by one Chris Tannehill never disappoints. Welcome in. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6. A full show today, and we still ran out of time for all of the things that we wanted to get to on today's show. But obviously, with Derrick Rose announcing his retirement after 15 seasons in the NBA, I think it's got a lot of people in their field. I know that I was triggered by the Harlan. Grabbing onto his knee is still triggering to me. Because you're just like, oh, no. Like, everyone, like a collective, and we can even go back to relitigating Spiegs. Like, why was he still in the game? It's a 12-point game when all of that happened with, like, 3 minutes left or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. I got triggered by why can't I be MVP, which he then delivered on and was. And I got triggered by graduations and meetings because there's time for that now. And some people will think of it. You know, it's he's 35, man. It's insane when you get older than 35 to then think about, like, this dude's life. There's a lot of life left for that man. Many chapters. And he gets to define what that chapter was. For him, it's like I saw him as an archetype. I saw him as like a story of redemption for the city, as a beacon of hope in lots of ways. And the sports prism means we just focus on what? 10 years? 15 years? If somebody is lucky, we get to look at that. And really what he's had is a hell of a run, actually. I found myself reflective on it today, Lawrence. It's like, it's kind of twisted to have to define your life that early. He's 35 with a lot more time to do, but it's what athletes get to do and kind of have to do with the benefit of the life they get to lead. That dude gets to write his own story from here on out after many, many, many of us tried to write it for him as it was happening. You know what I mean?
I do. And it's fun to watch like what's happened with Derrick Rose over the last, I would say, 5 years. Like, I feel over the last 5 years, like he's really reached into his uncle phase. I think he's in that right now, and I love it. When he means so much, it's different for, I think there are different compartments where you can have something that you connect with Derrick Rose. For kids who grew up on the South Side, he means something.
Mm-hmm.
For people of a certain age, like people who are younger than the two of us,
big time,
he really means something. He is their defining of what the Bulls are, because maybe you weren't quite old enough to appreciate what was happening with the Jordan Bulls. Here's your guy. Here's the guy. And he wasn't just your guy. He was the league's guy as an MVP, the youngest MVP in the league.
He was Adidas's guy on an international level.
And even some of the stuff that it's hard for people to understand, but I know that the people that listen to this show and listen to this station will understand it. The All-Star thing, where everyone's dancing and Derek's not, that is the most Chicago Inglewood bleep ever, because everyone here could relate to him being like, what are they doing?
I don't need y'all.
Like,
I don't got to live that way.
I don't dance. He's joked about it now. And he's like, I didn't know that that's what we were doing. And maybe if they had told me that we were all dancing, I would have danced. But the look on his face was the most Southside bleep ever. Cause you could just see him being like, Look at these goofies. Goofies over here dancing.
But it didn't take long, Lawrence, for that to age poorly in terms of the direction of pro sports and the NBA. It didn't take long for you to then get to a spot where you're like, man, I wish he was more like that. I wish he was more welcoming. I wish he did recruit more. And then maybe we could have overcome some of that stigma that Reinsdorf and Krause had left behind that he could not overcome, you know?
And if you look at some of the things that then happened, where there were other incidents where you go, oh, well, Derek didn't want to be actively involved in recruiting Carmelo, or you know what I mean? And you go, did that make it so that his career didn't end up being what it could have been? That's the other part. Derrick Rose as a cipher, as the, if you're even an NBA fan that grew up in this era of basketball, these 15 years of Derrick Rose, the what ifs, he's the greatest what if for a lot of NBA fans. Like, what if Derrick Rose doesn't get hurt? Could he have actually been a good foil for LeBron?
When it felt
LeBron
like it
was dominating in the East.
It felt like it, and it felt like he was, you know, right there at the apex of what was going to be team versus stars. As Luol said, 12 is better than 3 that one night when they beat him here at home in the midst of that season. But, you know, there's a temptation to look at the man's career and gauge whether it's a success or a tragedy, or ultimately a case of what could have been. It's life, man. And we have now lived the full career. And a lot of us have been conscious and cognizant of the filmic quality of this for every step of the way. And frankly, it's intense. And the fact that he's feeling good about it on the way out and composed and grateful and about it on the way out is really nice.
And find me a Derrick Rose Bulls fan, Derrick Rose era Bulls fan, who didn't have tears in their eyes when he scored 50 in Minnesota. Like, all of us. Like, he leaves here and you go, that's our guy. And we're glad that he's able to have some basketball joy.
And what he did in Minnesota or with the Knicks or down there in Memphis, whenever he came back, whenever that happened, the way that he is treated by people at the United Center, I think is a testament to what he meant to this city, to Inglewood, to the South Side, to Bulls fans, all of those things, and to what might have been.
Yeah, man. This texter says, I'm 31. I feel like Derek was the first guy I could claim as mine. We want to hear from you. We're going to carve out some time a little later on the show to talk with you about it. Because, Lawrence, where you and I are coming at it is not necessarily where some others are coming at it. So we'll open up the phone lines and discuss.
We're also going to spend a lot of time talking about the Bears as they get ready for their game against the Rams this week. In fact, Jared Payton is going to join us to do all of that next here on The Score.
How you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Jared Payton.
I always feel smarter when I get off the phone with you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Former NFL running back.
And Payton will hit Pater. Touchdown Titans.
College football national champion.
Well, Miami has erased all doubts about the national champion.
Son of Walter Payton.
Yes, Duke celebrating in the ring, ladies and gentlemen. The bad guy raised him up. Along with Walter Payton and Walter's son.
Sports anchor for WGN.
Jared, thanks, man. You're the best.
Thanks, we'll talk Jared. To you.
Bye, guys.
Speaking company.
Speaking company. He gave us a Caleb and Company.
Caleb and Company.
Did you hear that?
I love it.
The Jared Payton Show today. Jared Payton with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We are happy to invite Jared Payton on to the show to hang out with us here on Spiegel and Holmes to talk a little bit of Bears. JP, thanks so much for joining us. Before we talk Bears...
Yeah,
you have had a bunch of moments with your dad and with Michael Jordan. I wonder what it's been like for you to grow up and then be a professional while Derrick Rose was Derrick Rose.
Well, first and foremost, boys, I've been gone. I've been out of the city for a while. I was when the news dropped. So congratulations on the new show. I'm excited for both of you guys. Look forward to listening all the time. I was sitting here listening to you guys talk about D Rose, and I was hoping I got a chance just to, you know, kind of touch on this for a minute, man. It was to be a kid to always had dreams and aspirations of wanting to play professional sports from a little kid. I told my dad I didn't know if it was going to be soccer or what sport. I just want to play a professional sport. And to get an opportunity in my mind saying, man, could there be an opportunity to play in my own town? So when I came out in the draft, I remember, you know, the Bears had that local combine for all local guys. And I was like, man, like, could I come back and play in Chicago? Like, how cool would that be? Yeah, there's probably another backstory to all that stuff that I don't really know about, but we'll talk about that later. But I always marveled at how cool and how, I was in awe of how Derek got a chance to be from Chicago and play in his hometown and what that meant for him. And, you know, we always look at the flashy stuff and how cool it would be. But then thinking about being at home and all of the pressures that come with that, the people with tickets and this and that, people pulling at you all the time. I didn't envy that part. But I always saw a young man that basketball was always first. Basketball was his first love. And when everything else could be going wrong, he could retreat to the basketball court and what that meant for him. And so listening to you, Lawrence, talk about that 50 burger he dropped, you know, with the Timberwolves, I got a tear because of after the game when I saw tears flowing out of his eyes.
Yep.
And me sitting there, like, could not control myself, and I'm just bawling along with him, just hearing him talk about what it meant to him and everything that he's been through. And it was like, I felt it because we lived it here in this city. Like, we watched, we lived it. We were on that walk and that journey with him here in Chicago through all the good times and bad times. And it was like that first time that the emotions for me, for D Rose, just all came out. And man, he gave us so many just memorable moments here in Chicago, man. I was just the one that encapsulates everything of D Rose for me is that moment where the game winner against Cleveland, right? And then they're lifting him up in the stale face of D Rose, like no emotions at all. It was like, yo, that's my dude from Chicago right there. And so everything that he embodies as a player. I know, you know, Spieg, you talked about him talking about the meetings. I remember that moment too. I was like, I was sitting listening to it go, oh, D-Rose, don't say
don't
that.
Do it. Don't
they gonna go crazy on you. But you know what? It's a part of the journey, man. It's a part of the journey. Sometimes it didn't come out when he spoke, but you always could tell the passion every time that he stepped onto the hardwood. And so, man, I'm thankful and I'm glad that I feel old now.
Yep.
Like I was stepping on the plane today coming from New Orleans shooting this Super Bowl show, and I'm walking onto the plane and I see the notification and I literally just stopped. And the guy sitting down right before I'm getting on the plane's looking at me. He's like, you gonna get on? I'm like, yo, Derrick Rose is retiring. And it just made me feel old. And the first thing I did was sit down on that plane and just find a couple of clips that I could post on social just to people. And I said, man, like prime D Rose was different. It was just, it hit different. He was different. The way he moved, it just, everything was so different about his game. And he embodied what Chicago was all about when he stepped onto the court.
Jared Payton knows what it's all about in this unique sports town. Last time we were on, somebody texted and called you the Prince of Chicago. I mean, that's one thing to call you that, but we wanted to access running back Jared Payton. Jared Payton, ooh, running back here today. As we have been talking so much about the Bears running backs and all their different styles that they have, which running back should be getting the most touches in this offense right now?
As of right now, it should be Roschon Johnson right now. I mean, just by every time that he touches the rock, man, he's running with reckless abandon, trying to get extra yards, turning those legs and doing what he's got to do. DeAndre Swift, man, there's something about him in this offense. And Speaks, I think it's hard because this offense doesn't have an identity. Like we don't know the identity of this offense. And to me, that is kind of crazy talk that we went through all this summer. And I think we were all looking at like roses and all these great feelings because of the new additions that happened that were brought in and for Caleb Williams. But the one thing that I was always harping on was this offensive line fixed? And we've seen through the first few weeks of the season, it is not. And it is hard to get anything going without being able to be dominant up front. And so as of right now, I don't even know what run scheme fits for this ball club because they can't commit to the run. We don't see it enough. And that to me is a huge issue. And anytime you're throwing the ball over 50 times a game, to me is an issue. There has to be some type of balance there. And Shane Waldron has not figured that out yet. And it's as much as I talk about these guys learning on the job because of, you know, you're coming, you're not playing a lot of preseason. Well, I feel like he is trying to figure out that balance as well. And it's hard to do when you have to kind of change your blocking assignments around because of all the pressure that is getting into your quarterback's face and also kind of clogging up lanes to be able to run the football. But to me, if you're going to do it, and Khalil Herbert should be getting more touches too. Both those guys are, when you look at what they were last season, and I know it's a different dynamic because when you look at a offense that was leading the league in rushing, that was dominant, a lot of that was because Justin Fields. So guys broke off because of how Justin was able to do what he did. But both those guys are sufficient enough to be able to run the football hard. I've seen both of them run the football hard in Bears uniforms so far. So maybe to me with Swift, it's more of not those carries out of the backfield, but trying to find other ways. I would motion him out, put him in motion, and put him in the slot, be able to see what he could do against a linebacker or a safety coming down because he's so good in space. He's so quick. He's so shifty. Why not find other ways to be able to give him the rock and give those two young boys a chance to be able to tote the rock?
JP, Matt Forte has been adamant about gun runs. Doesn't like them. Tweeted last week. And I think you guys are in the same boat on this, but he tweeted last week that gun runs are for elite offenses, yes, not offenses that are trying to figure it out. Your experience playing running back in the league, as someone who's an observer of it, how do you feel about when and where gun runs should be used?
You know what? I can't stand them. I literally can't stand them. I mean, this wasn't so much for me, Lawrence, when I was in the NFL. It was more potent up in the CFL. That's where I had to kind of learn. And it's, you're trying to hit these same exact landmarks out of the gun, and things just don't always look the same, and pressing to the hole and trying to get back up north and south. Matt's right. When I saw him tweet that during the game, I was like, I couldn't like it enough. I was like, yo, if I keep liking it, I'm going to end up like unliking it at some point. So yeah, it is. It's really, really hard. And you have to be, you also, your interior line has to be sufficient. They got to be dogs if that's what you're going to do, because that push has to be right off of the snap. And sometimes it's hard to dissect where you need to go. I just think they need to line it up in the eye, and they got to keep figuring out whether it's ISO, whether it's outside zone, whatever is working. If these guys aren't, what I'm also seeing is, what most offensive linemen like to do is like to get out and run. And what we have seen is that doesn't seem to be the strong suit for this offensive line. And that's just crazy to me, like crazy to me, because guys don't want to keep catching blocks all day. They want to be mobile. They want to be athletic. And we haven't been able to see that with this offensive line. So they need to figure out up front first before you can figure out what you're going to do in the backfield with those running backs and design runs that you want.
17% of all snaps last year were with the quarterback under center. Means 83% of all snaps in the NFL were from the gun. It's groupthink. As you guys are talking and I'm thinking about identity, I'm afraid, man. Well, and maybe it'll work, but I think the identity that they envisioned was a three-headed monster at wideout that allowed Caleb Williams to play short game and pick people apart and then let the weapons run. And now if Keenan Allen's really going to be back this week, I think they're going to lean into it and try, whether for right or wrong, I think they're going to lean into it and try to do that again, Jared.
Speaks. Yeah. I think that was the vision too. I think that was the goal, but We're missing a step here. You didn't fix up front.
Well, they should have adjusted. You need an offensive coordinator that can look and adjust, like Matt LaFleur did early, like others did right away. And they have a guy who doesn't really adjust well, I fear, Jared.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, man. When you're decorated, you have credentials that you can figure that out. But also, look at that team. They can run the football, and up front, they're good. So that's the hard part here, is that you also have to be able to adjust, because we see these teams that the Bears are playing are bringing pressure. It might not be at the start of the game, but at some point they're starting to bring it because they know that this Bears offensive line can't figure out how to protect. So they're going to keep bringing it. To me, there always is, if someone's coming, there's some space open somewhere, right? And so taking advantage of quick throws off those blitzes, a side adjust, those type of things, to be able to get it into your wide receiver's hands fast enough so they can be able to make plays. What we've been seeing is a lot of these bubble screens and wide receiver screens, hoping that the guys are just going to bust out and take it 60 yards, like that's tough to do. Get your guys in space. I think having Keenan Allen back, if healthy, like close to 100%, gives you an opportunity to be successful. But this offense is not going to be successful, in my opinion, until they can commit to the run game. And that was supposed to happen last week against a Colts squad that was giving up, being gashed against the run, and they couldn't figure it out there. So lo and behold, I don't feel confident enough that they can get it done against a Rams squad that has been giving up a defense that had been giving up a lot of yards to opposing offenses.
And a head coach that might be farther along when it comes to game theory and game strategy than your head coach, but that's another conversation for another time. JP, we love you, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate you guys, man. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Jared. You feel me on that identity piece? Because don't you think that's what they wanted? Like, that's what they dreamed of?
I think that's what all of us dreamed of, Spiegs. I think that you're right on that. You could look at it and go, wow, look at this. Keenan Allen, you know what he is on third downs and how valuable he's been to quarterbacks that he's played with. And you know what DJ Moore is. You know. You saw it. You saw how dynamic that guy is, especially run after the catch. And then you go, look at this big body, fast, smart receiver that they drafted.
I get the whole thing. But once you don't have Keenan, instead of doing what they did, which is swapping DeAndre Carter in and thinking that could work, you got to adjust and put Caleb in the eye every once in a while. Put him under center and run Roshan or even run DeAndre, run Khalil, run him straight and try to soften a defense there. And they chose not to do it. And I mean, it's not too late or anything, but
no, it's not too late. That's why I'm not.
But it's a little scary to see the lack of adaptability, see the choice that was made. And now we hope to see it again.
It's not late, but it's definitely ugly. And that's not good. You know who's not ugly? He's actually quite handsome. Adam Amin. He is here. Adam Amin is going to help us with our Derrick Rose discussion, and he's going to help us talk Bears and Rams. And he's also just awesome. He joins us next here on The Score.